I put some of these signs out on the table. You're welcome to take one back to your church, or just take one if you like it. This is the what's happening this day and time. I've kept up with it for all these years, and asked many other churches and all the kids programs and things like that. Everybody that kept records. And this is the closest we can come to it. Ages at which people come to Christ, 4 to 14, 85%. 0 to 3, you know, I hear occasionally of somebody saying they were saved at age 3. From 10% for the 15 to 30-year-olds, and 40% or 4% from 30 above. So here is the greatest goal you'll ever see in your life in a church, right there. And you can take it and put it up on the wall somewhere or do something with it. But I brought several of them, so they're laying out there. This part we're going to talk about teenagers and reaching them, of course, and things like that. And we have a book, I don't know if this is the last one or not, on the Acts of Christian Teens. And again, this is not a how-to book, do it my way, you know, that kind of thing. This is the best way. But it is what we did for 20 years at Highland Park, second largest church in the nation, what we did with teenagers. And I think it'll stir your heart, not from my writing, but from the Acts of Christian Teens and what we could do. We found 12 teens in our church that had 5,000 attending that were not ashamed to go out and witness. And then we went up far from that and did a whole lot of things with teens. And basically what we did as leaders, I just told them how to do it and taught them how to do it. And then they're ready to go. This is another book if you have any money left over. Influence. It gives you a lot of good ideas. There's several chapters in here. But most of them are, the two big ones are about children and one big one about teenagers. Two major chapters in here. But the influence all around us, the home of influence, your home, the house of influence, your church, the book of influence, your Bible, keeping your eyes open, watching for opportunities, and so forth. So it's got a lot of things in there that you could use along the way to motivate your own people. I want to tell you about what we got. I want to use just a couple of pages here from the book Acts of Christian Teens, and then we'll get on. I don't have a booklet made up like this, but I'm going to show you and talk about things that we can do. And I want you to share in if you have something that works right into what we're talking about, just let me know. So in here, the first couple of pages you'd see is our purpose. I call it Acts, the Acts of Christian Teens. And those are all based on Bible verses that we have throughout our time. So our purpose basically is this, to start with, is to evangelize teenagers, discipling them for spiritual growth, teaching and training them to serve Jesus Christ, and providing multiple opportunities to do so in and through our church. That's what I'm trying to put into practice. Evangelize, disciple, teach, train, and provide opportunities. Teenagers don't walk around and say, hey, could I come in your class and sing a gospel song? They don't do things like that. They don't go looking for ways to serve the Lord. That's what a youth person is, or whoever's in charge. You set up, you find out what they're capable of doing, what they will do. You train them to be better at it, and then you turn them loose on that part of the ministry. So evangelize, disciple, teach, train, provide opportunities. I've done that for 52 years. And it explains each one of them in here as you go. We have several verses like, but you shall receive power after the Holy Ghost is upon you. You shall be witnesses unto me. There are 9 verses here that we relate to this ministry and what they can do for God. Then we have the strategy over here of the ministry in 2 Timothy 2:2, and the things which thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who should be able to teach others also. One of the goals we had was to have our teenagers bring in other teenagers. It's much better when a teen is talking to a teen than an adult is talking to a teen that the teenager don't know. And we all went visiting, but we tried to get the teens to line up somebody in our own church that they knew that we're friends, went to school with, and all that. But they didn't come to Sunday school evangelism yet. So we would go out and they'd try to bring their friend and take them with them. They didn't have to say anything, just stand there and pray for them as they were witnessing somebody. And little by little, they started to learn how to witness. And then they parted and found somebody else, and somebody wanted to come up and do that again. So strategy for the teenage ministry was that understand who it is we're attempting to reach. Some of the teens can disciple other teens. Some can disciple junior high kids. And that's big for a junior high to have a senior high person discipling them. Just like you do a discipleship ministry in your church. And big folks disciple other big folks who've never been discipled. That's a big deal when junior high gets a senior high to stop and even look at him, much less say hello, and much less disciple him in some role. You see, adults can reach adults, singles can reach young marriage, and so forth like that. So, there's some thoughts in here. They're in a transition. Teens are moving from childhood to adulthood in all areas of their life. And it's like a six-lane highway in this day and time. Teens are under mixed influence from the media, music, parents, school, peers, and some have already learned lean toward the values of MTV. You'd be surprised when I mention that in church sometimes, and you watch the kids, a lot of teenagers, and some of them sitting right beside their adults, they'll get a smile on their face and put their head down like this. Why? Because they're watching MTV all the time. Their parents don't even know it. And I'm telling you, I can remember 20 years ago or more, when they came out with advertising the first time for children. MTV was advertising their program and their things that they sell, and they were advertising them through the kids for the 9 and 10 year olds and things like that. It's unbelievable. And within these years, it's only gotten worse and worse and worse. So teens are under mixed influence. They're developing an identity. This is when you need... they need you to keep watch, to help them. It's sometimes desired to be separate from parents, teachers, and church guidance. So they need a friend somewhere who will talk as a child of God with them. Relationships are big at that time. Their world is oriented around relationships or the lack of relationships, and either could be good or bad. Family struggles, many teens year by year seeing their inner desires intersecting or colliding with those in their own family or siblings. So there's a lot of things happening for them along the way. Many voices of today are great in their face, reflecting adult society, feeling the driven complex, and so forth. So that's what fills this whole book here, as well as the things that we're doing to get them in the ministry and to reach out after others. Now, I want to just share some things as we go along here. Back when we first started, this was in 1970, and I know you weren't here, you weren't even thought of, but... You finally came along, but this was back then. Master clubs were just beginning because our church had no program at all with kids. So I started that and worked that for 40 years. And then One of the greatest fulfilling ministries is our children and teenage years. If you ever get an opportunity to go into that, or you want to serve the Lord somehow, some way, think first of the children, then the teens, then on up the line if you want to go further than that. But it's a great way that you can do that for your whole life. And you'll have one of the funnest lives in the whole world in going with children and teenagers. Master Club began there. We developed that for 40 years and now 20 years after still going. But one of the most fulfilling ministries in our children's is our children and teenagers. Children are 1/4 of our population and 100% of our future. Children, they're there. So the church must have godly leadership for our children and really an extremely committed leadership to teenagers. And that's what a lot of that about the book on influence does that and helps in that. What's it like to spend your whole life preparing to work with children and teens for the rest of their lives? I can tell you that after 52 years. Young men, those of you young in years and in the school here, I tell you one thing, it starts with a godly wife. So I would suggest you find one here before you go out into the world. The ladies told me, no, they didn't tell me that, didn't say that. But it's the same for the ladies too. I think everybody here would want a godly husband. But you can do that together. So, you both need to be sold out to God and sold out to each other. Whether your career is full time in a church or on a mission field, or another career, your church will still need you. Even if you're not in Christian work, as we speak of it, get paid for doing your work in the church, it's still the mission field for you, or it's still what you can do for God. You can also be one who touches and guides the children and teenagers. Now, I came out of the mountains of Tennessee. I've said that several times with different groups here, but I went to school with guys named Ox, big as an ox, looked like an ox, smelled like an ox. Leroy, several Leroys. Leroy's big name back in the woods. We had a guy named Snuffy. I'm telling you, these are the names they still go by. Snuffy, I was with him a few years back when we celebrated our 50 years of school. Snake was there. Buster was there. Elrod was there. Skeeter was there. Horse was there. So we got an ox, we got a horse. I mean, that's what we went by in school. You know what? They even had an ab there. Whoever heard of having an ab in your school? Well, whoever heard of having Buster or Leroy? But anyway, we all still go by that name. We send letters, Buster, Elrod, Skeeter, and all those. Up the road from us, we were so far back in the sticks, up the road from us about 15 miles, there's a little town called Stupidsville, Tennessee. I mean, the thing was as big almost as the back end of your auditorium up here. The sign was. Somebody put it up, "Welcome to Stupidsville, Tennessee." It was in the paper and everything. Finally, somebody went up there and burned the thing down. But anyway, that's the kind of places I was raised in. I was raised in a Methodist church for 18 years. Saved there. Baptized there. They wouldn't sprinkle you. They'd baptize you in the river. They would not sprinkle you. Not baptize you. Went to state college for 1 year, didn't like it, didn't like classes, didn't like anything. I was mad at the world. And for 10 years, I spent time down in Florida working with Pratt & Whitney Aircraft on rocket engines and things that back in the early moonshots and that kind of stuff. But fell in love with skin diving. That took a lot of my time. Skin diving is like almost like a fishing tournament you'd see on TV nowadays, but these were out 7 miles out in the ocean, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 feet deep. You just hold your breath, no line guns. You shoot a fish, you got to go get him, bring him up. That took me for about 10 years. I couldn't get out of that. But I was raised in that. And then the Lord came along and put me in a situation. One of the days I got back from that tournament, and on Monday morning after work all day, and that evening, knock came on my door from a little pastor at Tennessee Temple. It came from there, and was a new pastor and started a Baptist church there. And he finally got me. But I was already saved, and I was already baptized, immersed, and everything. But that in 8 months, I met my wife, and we were up at Tennessee Temple ready to go. And the second year I was there, Dr. Robertson brought me in. The church was already at 5,000, never had a youth man, never had a children's director in a church that big. And so there was not an organized structure. Sunday school was like all Sunday schools, and that was taken care of, but nothing else. So I started in this thing. I'd never been in anything like that. In my little church back home, never seen a missionary in 18 years. They talked about it and so forth, but I never knew about that. But I knew I wanted to do something for the Lord. And so I got it all straightened out. We went up there, and the second year, he hired me to be the teenage director. Never had one. So I worked it for a while and got them going and doing something for the Lord. And I kept looking at it and see why can't kids do this, what teenagers do, but down on a lower level for them? Because they're not teenagers yet. They're not even junior high yet. They're not even just getting into third and fourth grade and so forth. But I started working out things for them. And then we spent most of our time on the teenage ministry. But that's where we started Master Club back then in that day. But teens, reaching them. We did it through a lot of events, for one thing. I think teenagers always love events to go to if they're fun. If they're not any fun, if they're badly run and so forth, they won't be back again. But our teens go after teens. And when we went out visiting, we started with 12 and then we increased. We got them to get another friend of theirs to come. And then after they were able to lead somebody to Christ themselves, then they got another friend to come with them. And we just started growing like that. So we had several events that were right up their alley. I wanted to show you some just very quickly. I brought some of the old stuff now. This is old stuff, but I'm talking about the principle of the whole thing is getting going. We would always use our little flyer, something like this. Something like this we'd give on the buses when kids were going home from school. We'd stand right outside the gate and hand a pack of these to one of our students who were on that bus. He'd stick his hand out and get them, and then he'd give them to all the kids on the buses. And then we had Bible study and all that. But we would do all kind of those type of things. Like that was the fluorescence fun night, the great outdoors, hillbilly night. Now, I don't know how well a hillbilly night would go at your place. It went great at our place. Here's one, wild and crazy, wild and crazy. I tell you, Mildred, that's wild and crazy, wild and crazy. And I put them up there, and so we had this stuff all over to all high schools and everywhere. Inside, outside, turn around backwards night. You ever done that? Ooh, in this dressing day, I'm not sure we'd do that. But what's the thing for Christmas? Here's a fall retreat that we promoted. Let's go fishing. That's what we did. We just took them out and had a great, good fish thing with them. Film nights, of course, sometimes. We're going bowling. We'd do that. Ski retreats, and we had some snow in our area. Mystery bus ride. Never know where you're going or what you're going to do, but you're going to have a great time when you get there. How about a trade-up, all-American trade-up? You start with some little old dinky thing from your mom's house, and you go to houses and try to trade it up to just something a little bit better. And they'll help you with that. Lock-ins that we did, and the Great Treasure Hunt. We did that for kids as well as the others. Here's the Night of Shock when it's Halloween time. The biggest Halloween we had was in our church. We had seven, not at that time. No, that was another one. We, I think we had 1,400 out at that night of shock. And Polaroid panic, when everybody gets those crazy Polaroid shots, World Series and so forth like that. World Series of small games. And I didn't know any of that kind of stuff. I just started thinking. And I found out what kids like. I knew boys liked ball of any kind, and girls liked, well, I didn't know exactly what girls liked so much, but I asked my wife and got some information there. But I started asking teenagers what they liked. And then we'd put on a big thing, and for several weeks we'd go out and push that to the community. And try to get them to come into our place and do that. And that worked great. And then we started going to other places and doing the same thing. But we did winter retreats there for 18 years. We had about 1,500 come there from even places like yours would come down for a three-day retreat right after Christmas. We did basketball tournaments. We used our own gyms. And that was one that we had usually had three gyms going at the same time all around the city. And I'm telling you, it was great. I had Catholic teams come there. But what we'd do, we'd take our kids out visiting like we normally do. But for about 6 or 7 weeks, if we were going to have a basketball tournament around the city of Chattanooga, where it was, we would take our buses out, and here's two boys on a seat with a basketball, two boys on a seat with a basketball, two boys, and so forth. We'd have a couple of busloads of those, and we'd take them all around the city, and anywhere they saw anybody playing, schools or anywhere there was a hoop, we'd let them off there. And it's been about 2 hours there, making friends with others that were there they'd never seen before to come play on their basketball team. You had to have 10 on your side to come play. So we'd have two boys go out, and they'd get 8 others to come by them. And all of our kids were doing that same thing. And so we'd have a monstrous crowd when we got there. I'll show you a picture of one right here. So we did those. But see, the teenagers got them there. I didn't go after them. I just told them how to do it. I took them out to the place. Had a basketball. They took 2 hours, and 2 hours or so later, I'll come back and pick you up. And that was our visitation instead of door to door at that time. But the teens got them there, and they visited the parks for about 6 weeks or so, something like that. Here's one of the right at the beginning. We'd have they come to play, and you have 10 on a team, and they're guaranteed to play 4 games if they lose every game. And some of them would be like that, but that we let them play a little bit more, you know. And so we went all day, and during right at noontime, back then they brought a sack for lunch. We provided the drink for them. We got them in the stands, and here comes a gospel preacher in the door. And he stood before these, just like these guys right here. This is an invitation time. 4 gyms. We had that on that day. We had 4 gyms going. 56 came from this gym alone at the invitation time. And you can see a little bit of what's there. It's an old picture. I'm way over here in the corner. I'm kind of skinny guy back then. I don't know. I have no idea what happened. Don't ask me about it. But that's what it like. These are all kids that came there unsaved, and we'd take them back to our dressing rooms and everything. And Catholic priest was sitting there, and some of his guys would go back with us and came in the invitation. I still don't think they knew what was going on. But we had them back there, and we were talking to them about the Lord, you see. but that worked well for quite a while. And then we had 40 Bible clubs. We started with one, and I used students from the college to direct my Bible club. We had them all except for the summer, the 3 months of summer when they're gone home. And so we had 40 Bible clubs in neighborhood homes. A lot of people do it at the school, in a classroom at school. I did it in people's homes. And so every night, or one night a week, they could go and find, and when we witnessed, when we went through visitation and everything and found new kids, we'd tell them we'd have one close to them, because we took them close to schools all around that city and wound up with 40 of them at the end. And that was about, we had between 800 to 900 almost every single week. We went over 1,000 a few times, but not that many. But that was just our church doing that, our teenagers, and all of that doing it, and it worked just great. So we did that, and those Bible clubs every week are filled with teenage testimonies, making new friendships, follow up with new Christians weekly. Some of our boys would give little short sermons at those things, but it's basically a Bible, just a Bible club together, and then we'd invite them to anything else that we were having, what coming next. We took them on 18 mission trips, but they had to earn the right to go, taking kids, teenagers to the mission field. Our church, big as it was, and as big as they supported, I think it was 460 something missionaries when I got there, and had never taken teenagers to the mission field. So I started that, and we had some stipulations about it, that they had to earn the right to go. They can't just jump on the bus when it's ready to go, and they pay to go, but they earn the right to go. And I'll not get into that, but there's certain things they did. They had to, you know, be at visitation and different things like that that pertained to their own ministry. And they worked it out that way. First year, we only had about 23 or so. But I knew it was going to be because we'd never done it before. And parents were, you know, you know, they didn't want to do anything like that. But I promised them we'd do. So I got the head of Baptist International Missions to go with me on that trip. Because even Dr. Robinson didn't want it. He wasn't up on it real good. But we went on that mission trip and came back and saw their slides and their testimonies at church, and that was all I needed. Next year is three times that many going, and we kept going and went all over the place. Those kids would just do everything they could. We'd go out, and I think I've got some more things at the end here. I'll talk about what they actually did in the mission area. The teenagers reached our chapel areas, 64 branch churches when I was there. These were churches out in the woods, out in the countrysides mostly, small church. Dr. Robertson had 64 branch churches going, so his guys that were training for the ministry could go out there and have a part on the preacher part or the associate part or music part, and they would go out into a place and start a brand new church. Little towns, 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 people, but there was no Baptist church there. They'd go out and start one, and they could pastor that for 4 years before they even graduated to be a pastor. So that was a big help. So we started taking our teenagers out there to help their teenagers learn how to witness and so forth. I would take a couple of busloads of temple students out there on some of my big activities. We'd go out to their area where we had four or five chapels within 20 miles of each other. And they would go out and get all those people in their towns to come. And we'd have 500-600 people out there, out in the woods. I mean, the real woods down there. And we still had a great time. You know who did most of that for us? The teenagers. They got their teenagers to go after the teenagers they knew and brought them in. And then they know how to keep doing that. So that was a good ministry for our kids as well as theirs. So we had them on 18 mission trips that we did like that. And teens training other chapel areas that we just talked about. Our Saturday visitation in the city of Chattanooga, we had we started with 12 kids, and we wound up with about 160 on any given Saturday. And, you know, you can do things like that. This was one of the old things I picked up. My wife said, honey, don't take that over there. I said, I got to show them something we're doing. I was teaching them, when we started going, we'd have about 15 minutes or so. We'd do a spot of teaching on the soul winner, his plan to win, approaching a lost person. That would be one lesson we taught to these kids. And, and then we'd illustrate it and everything in front of them. Then the next week, we'd teach another lesson, dealing with lost people. Give a logical, step-by-step explanation. And then we'd show them how to do that. And sometimes in the Bible club, we'd have some lessons like this. And so this was lesson four. I think I had about 20-something of these things over the years. And we taught our kids every single week something about soul winning. You know, when you talk to children, his name is not, "Hey, you in the blue shirt." You know, that's not how you approach a child or anything else like that. But that was a good ministry for our kids to get involved in. The largest weekend, I think I've said this before, when our kids brought 7,000 into our 6,000-seat auditorium, and 504 came during the invitation. Who got them there? Teenagers got them there. I just told them how to do it. They did it. And it's amazing. I mean, the more they brought in, the more they wanted to bring more in. And that's fulfillment. God fulfills you when you serve Him. And that's what even a teenager can do that. Even little children can do that. I've seen little children cry when they get through in Preacher Boys. We have that for our children. In fact, it's going on right now. Right now, it's about 3 hours and they'll be through all day long with children in Master Club. They're in West Virginia today. And they've been several places around the country, and they'll be doing all this stuff. The kids will do that? Sure they will. They can do almost anything a teenager can do, except you wouldn't turn them loose on the street someplace. Or you better look for another church, one of the two. But when we go to the islands, on the missionary part, one trip was to the Navajo Indians in New Mexico. Not Old Mexico, but the New. We went to both. We went to Old Mexico and New Mexico. Ron and Don Corley, absolute twins. I still can't take them together. I still can't tell you which one was which. But they worked with the Navajos all their life out there. In fact, we printed the first Navajo Bible that was ever printed. We printed it at our place in Milford, but they translated it over the years to all the Navajos out there. And we'd go out there we could go all through the areas and then they'd bring out some of the big chiefs all dressed up and have a big bonfire with a chuck wagon and everything. And kids didn't know it yet. I told them to bring a sleeping bag. They didn't know why, because we're going to sleep on the prairie. We're out here west. We're out here where the cowboys ride all the time, you know, and rattlesnake. I mean, you know, things like that are out there. But they love that. And these old men so high up in Navajo country, they would tell of their salvation. And when God, and I can see those old, just like an old, it looks like his face is all dried up, you know, his skin and everything. And see tears coming down his face as Don Corley had most of them won to the Lord out there. I said, when this man came, you know, and he'd go like that, and he couldn't get it out. But that's where I take kids like that. I didn't take them overseas somewhere, because back in those days, didn't have a lot of money. Our people, especially Tennessee folks, you know, most of us lived in the woods. So I went to places I could get to, like I could drive to there. I could drive to Old Mexico, actually. We went to New York City with the Open Air Campaigners. Well, that was a wonderful operation. I think they're still doing that kind of thing. That's what we would get them to do. We went to Canada with them, where the Native Indians up there with Bahama Islands. We went to the Bahamas and also to an island called Abaco, one of the most beautiful islands you've ever seen. There's supposed to be 90 people live there. When we had a meeting that night with the teenagers on that island, we had 112 show up, I think. Out of 90 people supposed to live there. But we used our teenagers to sing songs in their language and all these kind of things, you see. But that's a great thing, and we've seen so many go into the ministry just from being around and see what God could do through them in all these places. Let's see. All right, that's enough of that. Anybody got a question on that? Have you ever thought about taking a mission trip with your teenagers? So how far is the thought, guys? Oh, did you? Costa Rica. Money people over here, they got it, you know. They'll fly down, it doesn't mean nothing. Is that right? That's great. With the mocks? With the mocks? Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, okay. Well, you get permission, but you start. And it may be the first thing you do on summers is to get your little crowd together and come up with a absolutely wonderful vacation Bible school, and find some churches out in these rural areas where a lot of them have a vocational pastor. I mean, he works all week long and then comes in and preaches. I mean, there's not a whole lot going on, not a lot more he can do. But if a group like that could come in and teach their kids during a VBS, well, all you have to do is bus them out there and they're ready with all their parts and everything, things like that. Or you can go to areas like that in the city where there is trailer parks and things like that. And they always have a little space for kids to run around in. And we've done that in our workers. We've had about 8 of them going at the same time. But it involves our teenagers to get involved in stuff like that. So anyway, that's that on that. Let's see. In music, we didn't have a lot going on at one time because for some reason, pastor just didn't like kids or the teenagers on the platform. But I knew. I went to him and asked him, and I think the reason was Dr. Robertson traveled every Monday and Tuesday. In the 20 years I was there, every Monday and Tuesday he was gone. He was going to visiting churches that wanted him to preach there, and some that wanted him to, just come and do whatever he does. But anyway, he would come back on Wednesday morning, and Dr. Faulkner and I would be the first ones to get his list. He had a list about like this. Every Thursday he said, oh, no. Because that's what we're going to do from now till Sunday. That's what we're going to do. But it worked just fine because we put in a lot of work for it. But I wanted a teen ensemble to start with. And we'd never had children on the platform or junior choirs are there or anything. Even evangelist Fred Brown's wife was the music director over all of Tennessee Temple, and she tried to get him to do that. So I said, "Now I went to Dr. Faulkner. I didn't go to Dr. Robertson. I went to Dr. Faulkner, and I said, Dr. Faulkner, I think Dr. Robertson, every time he goes out, he goes to so many different churches. They always try to make an impression when the big man, the big preacher comes in like that. And almost all of them always had their children's choir up and a junior choir or, you know, little kids up and things like that. I think he saw so many things like that that the training wasn't very good on those, and they missed words and, you know, all that. You know how a little kids choir will do. At our place, I mean, some of them can just stand there and, ah! You know, and we cheer for it at the end. Yay, way to go! I said, Dr. Faulkner, I believe we've got to have music in this. And I said, I want you to do something. I want you to find one time, just one service that you'll let me bring in teenagers to sing. He said, I don't know. But I didn't quit. And so I found me a young student who was really good in music. And I got him. I said, I want you to pick out about 14 to 15 teenagers, the best singers we got. And I'm going to give you 2 months, and I want you to bring 2 songs with all the parts. I want to hear it all. And they're going to sing in our church for the first time ever. And he agreed to that. And I started raising funds and getting our people to get their outfits on, you know, girls' outfit and the boys. And Dr. Robbins still didn't know anything about it. I'm so glad he's in heaven now. He's been there for so long. It's a good place. And someday I'll meet him. I don't know if he'll ask me about that or not. But it'll be all right because it's in heaven. And he may, you know. But finally, I hope he does. Finally, It came that Dr. Faulkner, the assistant, finally came and said, "All right, Ab, I'll give you a Wednesday night." You know, the least damage could be done on a Wednesday night, not a Sunday night or morning. It's out. No, Wednesday night. I said, "I'll take it." And on Wednesday night, I was sitting beside Dr. Roberts on the platform. And about 2 minutes before the service started, I saw our kids coming out of the door over here. Oh, man, just like right now, I still cry about it. This is over 40 years ago. And one was my daughter. And here come 14 teenagers. This is sharp as it could ever be. Sit on the front row. And Dr. Robertson and I were up here and two others over there. And he couldn't see around the pulpit. So he kept looking around there and getting closer to me and looking around there. And he said, and I didn't say a word. I was absolutely non-speaking. He said, who is that, Brother Ab? Is that a group, singers, you know, or something? I said, in the weakest voice I've ever had in my life, I said, those are our teenagers, Dr. Robertson. They're going to sing tonight. You'll like this. And he said, huh? That's as close as I can get to it. Huh? And I still didn't say a word. And Dr. Faulkner got up and introduced them. They came up. Oh, my goodness. Woo! And lined up and sang two of the most beautiful songs I ever heard in my life. Ever heard. And they finally got through, and they went off the platform. I looked over at Mrs. Brown, who is the music teacher for the whole place, and tried to get kids' things going. And she just said, you know, how'd you do that? How'd you do that? And the next Sunday, he was preaching on, Dr. Robinson was preaching on something about serving the Lord. And he turned around to me on the platform and said, "Now, Brother Ab, I like that ensemble you did, the kids in that ensemble. That was good. That's beautiful. I love that." And I said, that was one high, big breath. I'm trying for two now. What comes next? Well, he said, "Now, here's what you need to do, Brother Ab. You need to get you a junior choir, a children's choir, and a teenage choir. Now, get right on that, will you, please?" I said, "Yes, sir, I'm on it." In fact, I was already on it. I already picked my three leaders for the group. And I looked back over her again on the music director, and, you know. And so we were off and running then. I would never do that again, but I knew he'd already told me no, you know. But I knew if I could show him what kids who are well trained can come up and offer their music like the whole choir does. I mean that just can't get into all that. But that was great. So I'm just telling you some of the things we did there. I've got, for those of you that are going out, honestly, I just got a few, but you can have them reproduced with others. If some of you are about to graduate and you think you're going to go into a church ministry with some pastor, I've got a little thing here you can take with you. It's called Developing a Relationship with Your Pastor. That you can ask. See, when you go to, I had one pastor call me up and said, "Brother Ab, I went up to this school and I bought me a youth man." He bought him one. he said he's been here 3 weeks. And honestly, Brother Ab, I know I need a guy like that, but I don't know what to tell him to do. I've had him clean out every closet here. And would you come down and just sit with him for 2 days and tell him what to do? And when I got down there, he took me to breakfast and he re-told me all that stuff. And then I think it was the lunch or something, the young man took me out and he said almost the same thing. "Brother Thomas, I've been here 3 weeks. I've cleaned out every closet in the whole place. Pastor still hadn't told me what I'm supposed to do. And honestly, I don't know what to do. Pastor mentioned being a children's director and a teenage director, and I've never been in that in my whole life. I never even had one growing up. And so here's a guy that's never heard of the thing, taking the job, and the guy that hired him didn't know what to tell him to do. Now, it's not always that bad, but hopefully, when you look right. But what this is, you can take this and see a pastor who interviews you to come to his church. They can ask you anything they want to, anything, all right? And they have a right to, because they're gonna hire you for this ministry, plus pay you money to do it. So they can ask you anything they want to. But listen, you can ask them anything you want to, too. And you can do it before you say yes. See, these two, pastor and that guy, they just kind of did it on the phone, went up, and he had lunch with him and said, well, he looked like a fine guy. And he hired him. They'd never talk like that. But I give you that, how to interview my pastor. He'll interview you. And I talk a lot about pastor and all he has on him and all the things you can do to help him. But I also give you one what are you not satisfied with now in the children's ministry? Evangelism, curriculum, discipleship, growth. For this ministry, what would you list as perhaps the top five objectives you have for this ministry? That pastor couldn't even list two of them. But anyway, I've got a few here. You can take them with you because don't just sit there and agree with everything he says. And something inside of you is wanting to know if I'll ever get to do that here at this church or so. All right. Now, the last part of these things, is our time up? Is it 1 o'clock I leave here? I mean, I stop? One? Okay. Let's see. So one of the best things you could do is get this book here. If you can't, you can get it over the website. Our thing is trainingteachers.org. Very simple. We have 15 different books. This is all about what we did through that. It's not do it that way, but it's telling you what kids are capable of doing. Deal carefully. We taught teenagers how to deal carefully with children and all of that. I think that's about all you need right now. This guy right here, I saw him in our Master Club training, just like they're having one in West Virginia right now. And he was doing I saw him preach his first message at fourth grade. And that was, I don't know if this is fourth or fifth grade picture right there, but he's our new pastor now. He's our new pastor. Came out of that church, went all through everything there. And he is a brilliant man, but his heart is on God. His heart is on children, on ministry like that. And, in fact, we're looking for somebody at, Master Ministries, somewhere along the line here. But these are little preacher boys here. That's exactly what they're doing right now over there at the regional competition. This is a little girl that's got a clown outfit on that she was talking to a group of kids, and she's going to use the wordless book though. But she used a picture like that to grab their attention. And these are some of the activities we had. I started to bring a bunch of pictures, but I didn't have room. But you talk about hillbilly. If you get close to this, you'll see every one of them got false teeth in their mouth. And we did that for years and years and years. And but God'll let you take on a ministry like that and have a ministry that'll flourish if you have a good leader that knows what he's doing, trying to do. Sometime when you get out, if you want to, we have brochures on. We have a 3-day thing on leadership of teenagers and children and even adults. And this is our Loving and Leading Children Conference. It's coming up again this year. These are some of the speakers there. But we got like 125 topics you can choose from on what subject you want to deal with and things like that. So anyway, we better get out of here because I need to get this stuff out of the way. All right.